Okay, I want to talk about a certain issue about absorption of quanta by three brains that I have been worrying about over the last month or so. So I want to just tell you about the kind of issues involved here. One thing which has been of some interest in this game of deep brains over the last couple of years is, for example, the following kind of occurrence. There are some calculations which you can do at strong coupling, and quite miraculously you can find the same answer by carrying out a calculation at weak coupling. For example, if you consider the absorption of a quantum into a black hole, well, a black hole is what you get when you have strong coupling and you start with some d-brains. But if you start with the same d-brains and went to weak coupling, well, in some cases you can actually recover the same absorption properties. So, for example, that happened for the three-charged black hole in five dimensions. The absorption cross-section is the area of the horizon for the black hole classically, and you get the same answer when you work for the from the microscopic point of view at weak coupling. But we don't quite know why that agreement happens, but when it happens, of course, we feel happy. Well, soon it turned out there are many cases where you actually don't get agreement. In fact, first it turns out that for some cases you get the right power law for the absorption. If the absorption goes like energy to some power at small energies, you get the right power, but you don't quite get the right coefficient. Well, that may not be so bad, because you might say that as coupling increases, some coefficients get renormalized. So that's okay. But sometimes you don't even get the right power. If you don't even get the right power, it is suggesting that as you go from weak coupling to strong coupling, perhaps the degrees of freedom which are actually responsible for the physics are changing. At strong coupling, maybe other degrees of freedom come down, and the physics basically jumps in character between this side and this side. Well, so that's an interesting thing to study, and I would like to look, tell you about one case which happens there with the 1-5 momentum 3-charge black hole, and one case of the same kind which appears to be happening with three brains. So that's the plan of my talk. I'll first talk about a calculation I did with Alec Matthusis about just computing the absorption of certain fields by three brains. It's a supergravity calculation. You have some three brains you imagine to be here. Well, that creates a certain geometry. We know that near the three brains, that geometry is ADS kind. Very far away from the three brains, it's of course not ADS. It's basically going to be flat space. At first, one might think that the flat space should just be joined onto the ADS, so a particle comes moving in flat space and then propagates in ADS. But of course, it's not quite like that. There's a region in between, which we call the intermediate region, where the geometry changes from being flat space to being ADS. Now, the way that shows up in the calculation is that when you have to actually solve a wave equation for propagation from here to here, you have to solve, of course, the free wave equation here. Well, that's easy. You solve the equation in ADS, and that also can be done. But sometimes you need to worry about the fact that these two don't actually glue onto each other. You actually need to propagate them through the intermediate region, which is something which the three brains, of course, create, because after all, the whole metric is created by the three brains. But somehow it's not something which is captured by the ADS. I think that's of some potential interest and will show up in the calculation I'll be showing you today. And I'm not completely clear on where that should be fitted in the entire philosophy of representing the brains by ADS. I think there are many ways to think about that, and they might not all be equivalent. But the next calculation I'll talk about is in the same context. Take one of the particular fields out of the various ones of supergravity, the two-form field. We propagate it as an incoming quantum from flat space through the intermediate region. But here in the ADS region, we put a small test three brain, just one three brain hanging around there, somewhere deep down in the throat in the ADS region. Well, the quantum can get absorbed by that three brain. And if a three brain is just sitting inside smooth ADS, well, you know how to do the absorption. You simply have a Dirac bond infeld action plus Vesdomino term, which couples a coming incoming wave onto a brain. So there's no choice about that. You do that, and you compute a certain cross section. So there's some work which is sort of in progress with Das and Trivedi, and I'll be using here earlier results of Rajaraman and Das and Trivedi in trying to do this calculation, and we get a certain value for that cross-section. Now, that should correspond to some corresponding calculation in the Yang-Mills, I'll tell you a bit about what the weather calculation might be, though I don't quite know how to do the Yang-Mills calculation, so I'll not be showing you a field theory way of reproducing the answer. I'll just be mentioning the curious properties of this result, and then just point out that if we could get the same from Yang-Mills, that would probably be very interesting. Well, after that, I'll go over and just mention briefly an issue which happened with the 1-5 momentum system. That's the black hole with three charges. The absorption cross-section there has a very delicate dependence on the absorbed spin. What happens at weak coupling, in some cases, is not the same as what happens at strong coupling. If you have all three charges present, you actually get equality between weak and strong coupling. But if you have less than three charges present, what you get at weak coupling is different from what happens at strong coupling. In this case, you can actually see the change as happening because other degrees of freedom come down at strong coupling. So you can make a rough argument that happens. And because the effects are similar, the power law sort of changes here, it might be connected to what might be happening up here, so I cannot make an exact map. And if I get time, which I probably will not, I'll talk a bit about how the microscopic description of the weak coupling phase here is actually worked out. It turns out it works out in terms of something called torons. I may not have time to actually get to that. So, well, how would you do a calculation of absorption by D3 brains? This thing is standard by now, so I just mentioned this very briefly. You have a metric produced by three brains. This is the complete metric. H is this function. The three brains also have a five-form field strength, which has this kind of fall-off, and it is self-dual. You can then write down the linearized field equations in this background. This dot out here represents the background value, but everything is in the perturbative field. This A stands for the NSNSB field plus I times the RRB field. So you have two of these two-form fields. You can join them up into one complex field. But you have to solve these linearized equations in this background, and that should give you the absorption cross-sections. The fields we actually studied were those which did not involve the 10-dimensional graviton. Somehow the fields split into two classes, those which do mix with the graviton and those which don't. And somehow those which did not mix with the graviton were somewhat easier, so we did them first. Well, these are the fields. You have the dilaton. From the two-form field, you can make a scalar if you put both the indices of the two-form along the S5. You can make a vector from them if you put one index on the S5 and one on the ADS coordinates. You can make a two-form from the four-form. And, of course, you can take a two-form from the two-form. The linearized equations of these fields actually do not mix with the equations for the graviton. How do you solve these equations? That method is by now completely standard. Just to emphasize the role of the intermediate region, I want to mention that briefly. You have flat space out here. You have the ADS region here. In between, you have something which joins them. Just call it an interpolating region. If we try to solve the wave equation, let's say, for the dilaton, out here in flat space, it looks like these waves, plane waves e to the ikr with the appropriate fall-off. In the ADS region, it just propagates as a traveling wave in here. At the outer edge of the ADS region, you get certain power laws, and these power laws just reflect the dimension of the operator that correspond to this particular field. K is the spherical harmonic, so that's the sort of tells you which mode of the dilaton you're dealing with, which Kaluza-Klein mode, and so you get two different power laws, as we are all familiar with these days. Well, in this intermediate region, this side of it is still the ADS, and this side is the one which glues onto flat space. The side which is on the ADS gives you two powers, and at least for the dilaton, the side which is near flat space has the same powers. So the entire solution is one smooth power law from here to here, and the intermediate region has basically no role. It means you can actually glue flat space onto ADS without having to worry about anything else. Well, that's good. But if you go to some other case, like the scalar which you get from the two-form, well, here again you have traveling waves, and here you have traveling waves in here. At the outer edge of the ADS, you have the power laws which connect with the dimension delta of the operators. But the power laws on this side of the intermediate region, the side which glues to the flat space, are not the same. In these cases where the power laws are not the same, you have to be careful because you solve this equation, then you solve the interpolating part of the equation, and then you glue on to what you get in the ADS. Well, so I'll just briefly flash the results you get there. For all the fields, we listed out the powers in the outer edge of the ADS, the powers which glue onto the flat space, These are dimensions of the operators in the ADS. So they sort of correlate to these dimensions here. If you compute the absorption cross section, well, it all follows a nice pattern. I think that's too small to read, but that will become a bit clearer on the next transparency when I actually wrote out the values. For all those fields, you can compute the absorption cross section. This is actually even worse. As it turns out, all I say is all these all the absorption cross section for the different fields have the same algebraic form. So somehow all the, whether you have an intermediate region or not, at the end of the calculation, the answer just comes out to have the same algebraic form. It's a couple of gamma functions here and a power law here. Okay. There's one case here which I had left out, and that corresponds to the two-form field, which is a blank here. And then what happens is that you have two components to the field which mix with each other. So it doesn't turn out to be helpful to define a cross-section, and all you can do is describe the two parts of the solution and how they start at the outer region and how they mix when they reach in there. Again, I'm sorry, I think this is a bit small to read, and so let me just skip it. It doesn't quite pertain to the calculation I was going to show you next. Okay, so now we know how to solve for absorptions in various geometries, and we have noted that there's an intermediate region which is not quite captured by the ADS geometry, but we just have something to do with the three brains, because three brains produce that part of the geometry. Let's see what kind of a role this intermediate region might have in the calculation that I now want to talk about. So this is the absorption process I was going to mention. You start with a quantum of this NSNSB field, let's say the 1-2 component, out here at infinity. It propagates as a free wave. It passes through the intermediate region and hits the test D3 brain here. This is the ADS domain, so the test brain is sitting inside the ADS. Well, the gravity calculation is then clear. You evolve this field in there, absorb into the brain. How do you absorb something into the brain? Well, the action there you have to use, the brain is just sitting in smooth space-time, is simply going to be the Born-Infeld action and a Wessel-Minow term. So we do that. What Yang-Mills interpretation could this have? I put a question mark there because there's some puzzles associated to exactly this interpretation in my mind, but at least naively one would simply say you have n d-brains here, one d-brain slightly moved away, so your un plus one group, which you would have had if this guy was there, is sort of broken down to u1 cross un, and now I want to do the absorption of a quantum. So if you could really do a strong coupling Yang-Mills calculation for a case of absorbing this quantum where you've actually got a Higgs web for one of the components of un plus one, well, whatever answer you get from there should be equal to the answer we get from here from supergravity. I'm not going to give you the Yang-Mills answer, but let's see what properties the supergravity answer has. First, let's see what happens if the coupling is weak. If I reduce the coupling very much, now I can do brains in flat space. There's no sizable metric to speak about. The incoming quantum comes. If I want the absorption on this brain, the quantum just hits here, creates some vibrations. They get absorbed there. What's the coupling there? But here's the interesting point. The wave is just a plane wave which comes and hits in here. The coupling this time turns out to be that this thing Bij couples to the to two fermions which live on this brain. Well, that's the leading order coupling. So this quantum comes, one fermion pushes one side, the other fermion pushes up on the other side. You get an absorption process, compute the absorption cross section. It goes like energy cubed. Okay. Well, compare it to the following process. If you go to strong coupling and you make a kind of this black brain out of it, you take this quantum of BNS and S12 and throw it in. You compute the absorption cross-section, and that goes like omega to the 7. So that's much smaller. But there's no immediate contradiction between these things, because it's a slightly different question. You're asking for what's the absorption into one test brain away from these brains, and this is absorption into a collection of brains all placed together. But still, it's a bit striking if an answer goes like omega cube on a single brain, but onto all the brains put together, it goes like omega to the 7. So far, of course, you notice that when the coupling is weak, all these other brains have no role in the process. The quantum just comes, hits one brain, and gets absorbed. What happens when the gravity is turned up, and now we want to do the calculation in this whole geometry of the wave coming and getting hit in here and getting absorbed? But here we can use the results from a related calculation done by Das and Trivedi recently, which I think is very interesting. What they tried to do was the following. you have these fields of supergravity, and at least in the ADS region, they should have a one-to-one map with Yang-Mills operators. But how do we find that precise map? In particular, what are the coefficients in that map? What's the operator identification? What are the coefficients? What's your general rule? Well, they said perhaps you could find these couplings using the following kind of idea. Imagine that at the boundary of ADS, you have an effective brain which sits there. But there's no brain there really, but imagine there's a hypothetical brain there, and couple it to incoming waves by using some kind of a Dirac-Bonne-Infeld action, Dirac-Bonne-Infeld plus Vesdomino. Well, that will certainly give you some couplings, and maybe those couplings are actually appropriate to finding the correlation between Yang-Mills operators and supergravity fields. We'll be using the vertices derived from this calculation, though we'll be using it in a slightly different context because we're just doing absorption into one single test brain. But most of the calculations we can just borrow from there, and then we'll use the vertex from there, do a calculation of the cross-section. The important effect in this calculation comes out to be the following. If you start with a BNSNS field with a 1-2 component at infinity, as it travels down this throat and passes through the intermediate region, in traveling through the intermediate region, the field which is starting here changes character. But how does it change character? Well, here it was simply B12NSNS, but by the time it reaches here, it's actually a combination of B12NSNS and BRR03. In fact, by the time it gets all the way into the throat, you find that the magnitude of BRR03 is exactly equal to the magnitude of BNSNS12. Now, you would never have seen that if you had done a weak coupling calculation in flat space, because of course it's the geometry of this which is, and the field strength in the background which is doing all this change. The change happens over the intermediate region before the thing hits the ADS domain. Let's see the exact nature of that change and how it affects the absorption into that brain. Well, here's a field equation. The field equation tells you that the field strength of the RR field is connected to the field strength of the NSNS field through the five-form field strength which is present in the background. If you take an S wave for the BNSNS12, the S wave at infinity looks like a plane wave coming in with some power law. But then you find for the S wave that the field strength of the RR field can be found from the value of the B12 field. The two are just connected. But from the field strength, if you actually want to find the value of BRR, you have to pick a gauge. So let's pick a gauge where you put the R3 component of this field to zero. If you go on to the ADS region there, this capital F looks like R3 upon R4. There the NSNS12 field, if you solve the field equations, has a piece which goes like R4 and a piece which goes like R⁻⁴. And actually this piece is bigger. You might think that R is going to smaller values, this piece should be smaller, but actually this coefficient is bigger. So overall in the domain where this calculation is valid, this piece is bigger, and that's simply because as an incoming wave tunnels through into the ADS region, in tunneling you know the dropping solution always has a bigger coefficient than the rising solution. So this piece sort of dominates, and if you put this value in here, you can solve for the value of B03, BR3 has been set to zero, and if you solve for B03, for this piece you will find that BRR03 comes out to be equal to BNSNS12. If I pick this piece, I would have got a minus sign, but this piece is dominated by this piece, so this is all we get. And this calculation was essentially contained in the papers of Rajaraman and Das Trivedi. Well, the consequence of this is that the test brain we are going to place down the throat is not going to feel only the effect of the incident particle, BNSNS12, which is what we would have done in a flat space weak coupling calculation, but the effects of both of these. And both of these have equal magnitude, so it seems it would be hard to get this effect from any kind of perturbative correction to a flat space calculation, because the effect of the background fields has been strong enough not to generate a small amount of BRR03, but to generate an amount of BRR03 which is equal in magnitude to the incident quantum. Well, the effect of this on the brain is the following, and this corresponds to getting that power omega to the seventh we just mentioned a while ago. The NSNS12 field actually couples to an operator of dimension 4, the one which creates two fermions in the brain. The 03 component couples to another operator of dimension 4, but if these two are equal, well then the total happens to connect to an operator of dimension 6 because the component of the operator of dimension 4 actually cancels. Well, what is this operator of dimension 6? The coupling is Bij operator ij. The operator ij has this kind of a form which these people found in their paper. To actually compute the cross-section for absorption, you need to know the propagation of free waves along the brain. even though the brain is placed in the ADS region, it turns out there the effect of the metric cancels out for these fields, and that's the free part of the brain action. So now we can turn the crank and calculate the absorption. The calculation is straightforward, though it's somewhat tedious because you have to compute the two-point function of that operator. We want, for this coupling, we want to compute the cross-section for creating three gauge fields and one gauge field and two scalars on the brain. But you can compute such a cross-section by taking a two-point function, as Klebanov and collaborators showed at some point, and then taking a cut using the very standard formula for those. The two-point function of the OO operator came out to have a nice form, JJ minus JJ times the coefficient, with J is this function. I'm sorry, there should be a 2 here. Delta IK minus 2XI XK upon X squared. The FF correlation function actually already has this form. That fact is very helpful in carrying out this calculation. The phi phi correlator does not have this form, but because of lots of non-trivial cancellations in the middle of the calculation, the final answer for OO actually does have a nice, neat form. So that calculation takes actually a sizable amount of effort, but is in principle completely straightforward. And you can then compute the cross-section from computing the discontinuity there. It does go like omega to the 7, and that's the number. So we have managed to get a classical answer, which classically is sort of forced upon us. If we assume that we have a geometry given by these three brains, we propagate in that geometry. If the brain sits in the middle of a smooth geometry, we have no choice but to use the DBI plus Bessel-Minow action for it. We get a certain number, and well, that's it. Now, what does that correspond to in the Yang-Wills process? Let me just try to speculate a bit on that. Well, the picture is like this. If I had the brain in flat space and a quantum came, we got the sigma going like omega cubed. But when the other brains were also present, somehow the answer changed and became omega 7th. It's as if instead of absorbing something into a single absorber, you had a kind of classical source nearby which first distorts the incoming wave and therefore reduces the absorption into the absorber. This effect was created in the intermediate region by the brains. There's a further curiosity to this, which I don't have too much time to go into, but if I push these brains all the way further deeper down the throat, something else interesting happens. In the domain where I was working right now, this parameter was less than 1. The incoming field dropped like a power r to the 4. The absorption vertex actually went like 1 over r fourth, and the cross-section was independent of exactly where I placed the brain. But that's interesting. It doesn't matter how much Higgs wave I give to the brain, the absorption doesn't depend on that, so it appears that there's nothing being exchanged between the N brains there and a single brain which I moved out, because after all, this brain doesn't care very much where it is. And that's okay because my absorption energy was low, so I couldn't excite any open strings between those N brains and this particular brain. But now let me push this brain even further deep down the throat. At that point, the incoming wave actually, instead of further getting suppressed like r to the 4, at some point doesn't get suppressed anymore. It becomes oscillatory. At that point, if I place the test brain, the cross-section actually grows as r goes to 0. It would be interesting to reproduce this effect from some kind of a Yang-Mills interaction. At this point, you might imagine that you are possibly exchanging open strings between the test brain and the brains which actually were there giving rise to the background. But I'm not clear how, because after all, there are many scales involved, and somehow I have not been able to convince myself that those exchange effects are indeed large. So the situation is a bit similar to what happened for the 5D black holes. I'm basically going to skip over this because I'm sort of out of time. But roughly what happened there was that if you took just a single string and you compute the absorption at weak coupling of a graviton into it, you got a cross-section which went like the area of the horizon. That looked okay. But somehow all the possible polarizations of this graviton all had an equal absorption cross-section, which is not what the black hole did. On a black hole, if you throw a 10-dimensional graviton, the polarizations which are in the compact direction which give rise to scalars actually have a big cross-section equal to area of the horizon, and the ones which have polarizations in the directions which are transverse to the compact directions actually have cross-sections which are suppressed in powers of omega. So the weak coupling answer here doesn't give the full strong coupling answer, but here it turned out, at least in the case where you had two charges and a similar effect happens, you don't have all three charges, it turns out as you increase the coupling, at weak coupling you get the wrong answer. At strong coupling, you expect the black hole answer. But as you increase the coupling, you find at one critical point, at smaller couplings, you find if you add some energy to a vibrating string, that's just up in the string carrying vibrations, The extra energy goes into vibrating the string with vibrations traveling up and down the string. But if you keep increasing the coupling, you find that beyond some critical coupling, it's actually cheaper for 5-bend, anti-5-bend pairs to get excited because their mass goes like 1 upon g. Okay, I'll just write. So in fact, at that point, the degrees of freedom which do the absorption change character, and that change actually just gets you the right spins and the right cross-section to make everything work again, and the transition happens, one can estimate, at the so-called correspondence point of Horowitz-Polchinski, and that sort of takes care of everything, but you have to notice that you get this dependence from omega to the 0 down to omega to the 3 and omega to the 6 in this case, only if you use the fact that the degrees of freedom which do the absorption actually change as you change the coupling. So that's my closing remarks. Suppose you ask this question now, coming back to the three brains. Here are three brains. At weak coupling, I absorb something. I get an answer. If I keep increasing the coupling, what's the absorption cross-section at some point? Now, this is not purely an ADS question, because after all, the metric has an ADS part, an intermediate part, and then the flat space region. But anyway, this is a natural question I might want the answer to, at least in a black hole kind of context. So one might speculate the following thing might be happening. If this is the incoming particle which sort of scatters off these brains, I can look at it as a closed string which exchanges virtual quanta with these brains, which can be also sort of as closed strings, or I could look at them as open strings. But we know the entire moduli space of this world sheet can be decomposed using the methods of Zweibach into a part which is dominated by closed string exchange and a part which is dominated by open string exchange. This was studied in similar context by Kaba, Douglas, Puliu, and Schenker. You can break up the moduli space into these two parts in many cases. It seems that in the intermediate region, the incoming quantum, the modification we are seeing there happens because of closed string exchange with these brains placed here. It's not probably easy to capture that through the open strings, but once the field gets modified there, and that modification we saw was quite severe, an NSNS field change to NSNS plus RR, once it reaches in here, once it reaches the ADS region, some of the effect of open strings might be dominant, and the Yang-Mills ADS correspondence can take care of what happens. However, to study the complete answer for the absorption, we first need to slap in a part which has to do with the closed string exchange, and then the ADS part takes care of the open string exchange. Only putting the two together gets the complete answer, and in this present case would reduce the omega cube down to omega 7. Okay, I'll stop there.
Are there any questions?
Gary.
If you start with a linear combination or a sum of the Lewis quarks, B field, and the Ramon B field in the three brain geometry and evolve it in, can you evolve to pure Lewis quarks B field and thereby have the three brain larger?
No, that's a very good question. You can't do that. Suppose you start with a three brain in flat space. Let's first work at weak coupling. And first, you might want to ask, if I throw the NSNS field 1-2 component, I get an absorption which goes like omega cube. The RR component, of course, by symmetry also goes like omega cube. So I might want to ask if some linear combination of these would cancel out and go like omega 6. But the answer is no. In fact, every combination goes like omega cube. You can rotate between them any way you like. When you put the brain inside the ADS domain, you might ask if there's any combination that will actually connect like omega cube now, or do they all have to go like omega 7? And in this region, it turns out they all have to go like omega 7, whatever combination you take. Because basically what's happening is that the degree of freedom which you have available to you is the, let's say, B12, when you're in flat space. You can make a plane wave which is e to the ikr times B12. But you can't make a plane wave which is e to the ikr times B03. I mean, that's a gauge degree of freedom. There's nothing there. There's no propagating wave like that. So at the location of the test brain, only B12 oscillates and B03 is identically zero. However, if you're in a background where the five-form field strength is present, the existence of B12, by reacting to the presence of this background, produces a B03, and both of them actually influence the test brain. Okay, and therefore, the situation will be different. So it depends on the ambience. Some of the incoming particle reacts off the background, maybe creates a kind of polarization of the background, and creates an additional component, and these two components mutually cancel out the leading effects and give rise to the subleading part.
At the back there.
For Thomas, this appearance of having to include the closed string exchange
exactly the post-string exchange part?
There was a question here.
QGIS computing two-point function, in principle, there is a possibility that the operator you're looking at is not, say, the same operator you would get in the ABS identification, but, say, just momentum times that operator. In other words, there could be some energy-dependent normalization factor, which would scale the two-point function, but, say, if you compute the three-point function, there is an invariant quantity where it cancels out.
Okay, so your question is, can the operator which we have plugged in here to start with have an extra omega, perhaps multiplying it in its correct definition, so that finally when you do it, the omega powers work out the same way at weak coupling and strong coupling? Is that the question? I don't think that is the case here, because somehow within Yang-Mills, what the operator is, I don't know. So we are not actually doing a Yang-Mills calculation. We have done a bit of gravity and a bit of brain calculation mixed together, but together those two things make sort of what I would call a quote-unquote classical calculation, which should be compared with a true full U n plus 1 Yang-Mills calculation. In the full U n plus 1 Yang-Mills calculation, what the operator is, did it carry any omega renormalizations, I don't know. But just out here, if a wave is coming in, till it comes to the brain, I have no choice, I just evolve it as it is. And if a wave hits the brain sitting in the middle of otherwise smooth space-time, I think the coefficients of the DBI, I have no choice again. So I don't know in this calculation where I would have room for even changing a factor, let alone a power of omega. But maybe I didn't quite follow the question.
Well, if you're absorbing by just a collection of coincident rays, right, then you should be able to apply both sides of the equation. And then at least I know of cases where such things happen. Basically, the operator has some extra number of derivatives, which translate into some number of powers.
No, that is certainly true. There are cases where the extra derivatives come in, and that typically happens when you're doing, let's say, a higher partial wave component of the particle with higher spin. And that I should have mentioned in the table of cross-sections we had, many of those cross-sections could be understood and being equal to weak coupling answers precisely because they contain appropriate powers of omega. So for many of those fields in the table, that's exactly what did happen. However, for this particular one, that doesn't happen. Because here somehow the fact that the fields mix character between the NSNS plus RR in the intermediate region, that I think is a bit different from the fact of the omega powers coming. Those omega powers mainly come because the brain actually has motion, and so you have to evaluate the field away from the brain. That's the source of the omega powers. But here that's not quite the case. You have brought the field already to the location of the brain. The field is sitting on the brain nicely and properly. It's the fact of what happened to the field before it reached the brain which caused the omega change. And that's why I think we are not able to see it perturbatively in this case. But maybe we should talk more about that.
Okay, well, we'll break now and reconvene at 3:30. Can we thank the speaker again?